In a time where social justice organizations are under attack, we bring you Rad Ops. That stands for Radical Operations. It's a dialogue-based tool that supports organizations assessing and discussing the possibilities and limitations of putting liberatory values into practice.
Many organizations are in turmoil as they pivot to meet this moment. RadOps offers principles, guiding questions, and tools that organizations can use to identify ways that they can and cannot practice liberatory values in this unjust world.
I'm one of your co-hosts, Yeshna Maya Padamsi.
And I'm your other co-host, Sha Grogan Brown. Together, we bring over 40 years of movement operations experience to inform these conversations.
Today, we are flipping the script, and we've invited an incredible guest to interview us rather than us interviewing her.
I'm Denise Perry, and I'm going to let Yeshna Shah introduce me.
Denise has been a mentor, a peer, and a champion of each of us, and especially of this project. Denise has spent more than 35 years in labor and community organizing work, dedicated to developing strong grassroots leaders, democratic organizations, and progressive social movements. She co-founded PowerU Center for Social Change, rooted in Miami's historically Black community of Overtown in 1999. She has served on a variety of boards to support the process and development of organizations. She is currently a co-director and co-founder of Bold Training Institute, which is developing Black leadership for transformative organizing and building Black power across the country.
We are so thrilled to have Denise here with us. I've known Denise for a long time. She's been a real champion of this project and mentor to us. And one thing that stood out to me every time I've talked with Denise about RadOps is her humility in recognizing that, you know, as an organizational leader who's not primarily responsible for operations, she really talks about how helpful it is to see all these operations roles laid out. And of course, because it's Denise, she brought in a sports analogy and said, you know, like in baseball, you're not going to win if the only thing you touch is the ball. You have to have a bat and a glove. Someone has to line the field, sell the tickets, measure where the bases are, evaluate what order the team should be in for the lineup. And that's what makes a team, that every single part matters. And even though you might not think it's a big deal, if you came out and there weren't any bases and no lines, you can't play the game. And I'm literally quoting her from what she said to me because I wrote it down. And I was like, I'm not a sports person at all, but this analogy really works for me.
Thank you for being our guest podcast host, Denise. Welcome.
I'm honored. This is really exciting what you all are up to. So as Shaw indicated, saying that he's known me for a while, I've known Shaw for many years also. I have seen his work. He has worked to strengthen movements in social justice for over 25 years. And for many of those years, he's identified as a plumber, and then an architect for the movement, ensuring systems, resources, and structures for successful organizing. Shaw is a grassroots feminist internationalist. His first political home was the Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador, CISPIS. He found his second political home in grassroots global justice while mobilizing resources and running registration for the U.S. Social Forum in 2010. And was then on the staff for GGJ and most recently joined the founding team of the Patients Union as the chief of member engagement and services. And Yeshna is first generation South Asian immigrant queer femme raised in and by the U.S. South. That's right, raised by the U.S. South. Yeshna has spent more than 20 years supporting social movements through creating innovative infrastructure and sharing liberatory healing practices. She uses systems thinking, organizing, art making, somatics, faith, and yoga for healing and transformation at the intersections of immigration, labor, gender, and sexuality and body autonomy. During Yeshna's 7 years on staff at the NDWA, the National Domestic Workers Alliance, She created containers of care throughout foundational systems that continue to be built upon at and beyond the organization today. Yashna is a co-founder and moderator of RadOps. She's a co-director of Sanctuary Embodied, which brings transformative practice and embodied skill building for left movement leaders and formations to build collective power and develop compelling cultures that can sustain for the long haul. Yashna, again, another ahead, on the edge, trying new things, but really rooted in our bodies and understanding how we move in this world and how the world moves and inspires us. Thank you both.
Thanks for introducing us.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Let's start with the two of you telling us, why RadOps? How'd you get here?
Well, I'm going to rewind before RadOps. So I first came into movement work as a systems thinker and infrastructure builder, kind of accidentally, when I first started out at the Durham Literacy Center here in Durham, North Carolina. It quickly became clear that the systems and structures I was building were people-centered, because the Literacy Center was about serving the community. It was about bringing adults at different literacy levels in to increase their reading levels for better job opportunities, to better help their kids with their homework. So it was really a community resource. And so I knew the systems I had to build were to still center them, are who we were serving. And so I knew that I was creating containers of care. And as I was building out infrastructure, fast forward to 2011, my first year on staff at NDWA, the National Domestic Workers Alliance, which is how I met you, Denise, is through NDWA. I was tasked to set up administrative systems for an organization focused on care. And I was like, this is perfect. It was clear that as an organization, we wanted to walk the walk and not just talk the talk. So internally, we set out to design the operations of the organization to be values aligned. And I wanted to, and to getting it to, how did we get to RadOps? So I have a little story, which is I remember a small office room where we fit four desks. And I don't know how we did it, but, you know, this is how we do. We're innovative in our movement work.
Make a way out of no way.
Make a way out of no way, exactly. So we had four desks in there. And it was myself, Tara Schwy Ellison, Felicia Martinez, and Mae Singerman. Three of us were on staff at National Domestic Workers Alliance, one on staff at Caring Across Generations. And we were constantly pausing and asking each other questions of like, we need to build a new thing. How do we do it? How do we do it in a values-aligned way? And we would ask each other, or we would phone a friend. Sha was my phone a friend over at GGJ. And so we were constantly, you know, crowdsourcing and resourcing off of each other. The four of us in that small room were like, okay, what if we just made an online network that we could constantly ask other operations folks in the same way how to do values-aligned infrastructure building? Because we don't want to follow the path of corporations. We don't want to follow the path of old school, big box nonprofits. How do we do it in a more movement and liberatory aligned way? And so that's how the online social network started. And that was of RadOps. And that was over 10 years ago. And then this RadOps project, which Shaw can share more about, is 5 years in the making. And I remember 5 years ago, Shaw was the first person that I called, again, phone a friend, and was like, can we have a one-on-one? Because I have this idea. Can we do it together? So that's, you know, even though we've coined this phrase of RadOps, it's also a longer lineage that maybe I'll talk about in a minute, but I'd love to hear about what you think. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we've referenced each other as like our phone a friend operations person. But I also was in the social media online, the sort of online network, and have regularly come back to that space for just like troubleshooting and sort of like getting a pulse check on like any ideas about this. And it's still a really active community, which is such a huge offering for us, you know, and especially folks that don't have necessarily that kind of a network to find each other, you know, but to be able to like lean on each other in that way and just share like, here's what I'm thinking. And it, there's debates and, you know, it's really live.
It's yeah. true. And it started with only like 20 people in the group, and now it's over 900 people. So it's really grown and as you said, still active and alive.
And then I think, you know, you had reached out to me, Yeshna, and starting to do kind of from that group, you're like, okay, what could we offer to even more people? How could we get this framework out more broadly? And so, you know, we had a few conversations about like, how could this get even farther? And, you know, and then after, when I decided it was time to move on from GGJ after 15 years and was sort of like, what do I want to do next? I just kept coming back to this project and to our conversations. And so I sent you a voice note on New Year's Day.
That operation tool, voice notes.
That's right.
That's exactly. Right.
Definitely it is an operations tool. Yes. Use those voice notes. And I was like, hey, will you bring me in as a collaborator to turn this project into something that we could get out more broadly? And I'm so glad you said yes, because it's just been a huge gift for me to be able to have this time to really reflect on the lessons of the last couple decades. Mm-hmm. And to get to have conversations with so many people that I admire and respect about, like, how are we going to face the tasks ahead of us as a movement?
It's going faster and faster and faster. That's the thing. Which, thinking about that, my other question is, what do you mean by RadOps? Like, who is this framework for? Because everything is moving incredibly fast.
The primary audience for this framework is leftist movement organizations who are currently operating within like a nonprofit or other state recognized structure but whose work is guided by a vision of liberation. And, you know, we hope it'll also be useful as a resource to many other audiences, but we felt like it's important to name our primary audience up front, because that's really who this comes from and is for. You know, and it's sort of in this way of like helping us dream and envision the world that we believe in while we're not living in it right now, you know, and sort of calling us into this conversation of working together about like, what measured risks can we be taking that can push against the edges of the systems we're currently in towards our liberatory visions of the future. We also want to be really clear that we're not building a new organization or even a consulting practice, you know, that it's a passion project and an offering for our movement, and that there actually are so many RadOps practitioners and projects out there and tools that already exist. And so we're really hoping this project will build more interconnection and relationship between what's already existing and then foster hopefully even more to grow.
Which feels very aligned to your all's values, right? Versus starting an organization. That's typically where we go, oh, I have an idea, build an organization. But what you're doing is, I have an idea, I want to share some resources.
Exactly. Yeah. We've both, as you mentioned, Denise, we've both been doing this work for over 20 years. And we were both at points where we thought we have learned so much and we're wanting to understand that. But in understanding and reflecting back on what we've learned, we also want to share that. And this feels like a great way to share what we've learned and hopefully folks can keep building from here, that this isn't the only touch point, but that it'll keep growing. And as we're talking about this, like this question of who is this for, I also kind of want to lift up, and where did we come from? Like what are, as I mentioned, like even though we've coined the term RadOps, there's a whole RadOps lineage, and part of this project is a lineage's timeline, and that there's so much behind me that we come from a history of an evidence that building radical infrastructure helps further our movements. And one, I want to shout out Che Johnson Long at VCW Vision Change Win for helping to seed the idea for really uplifting lineages. And one, in my research, one of the things that I felt really inspired by was the 1996 Indigenous Data Sovereignty Movement study, which was an independent study that recognized the need for First Nations to govern their own data, which I feel like is such a great reflection of using, how do we use existing systems like data and operations as a tool and pathway to sovereignty and challenging colonial practices. And I think that was 1996, and we're in a particular moment now of how is our data being used and how do we reclaim it, and to look again to Indigenous movements to learn how did they reclaim their data and what can we learn from that. You know, as we know, lineage is an ongoing thing. It doesn't just stop in this moment, but now we are the ones making the future. And for those who come next, we'll look back to us to see how we handle this movement where our organizations are under attack, and how did we deal with the funding cuts, the organizational conflicts? How did we innovate and keep building movements infrastructure when it was actively being taken down? So just wanted to invoke in lineage.
I also think have been thinking about like, what are the lineages that I'm drawing from? And there's so many. One thing I want to name here is also that I've spent a lot of time doing fundraising or resource mobilization for movements. And through that work, I also ended up learning about Frederick Douglass's role in the Freedmen's Savings Bank. This is like in the 1860s, 1870s. And, you know, he's most known for being like an abolitionist orator and writer, but he also did this really powerful, what I would call operations work, to try to recoup the savings of formerly enslaved folks who lost their savings to the greed of the white railroad barons that founded the Freedmen's Bank. And it's a really messed up story. If you haven't heard about it, look it up. But what really stands out to me is Frederick Douglass, in his sort of radical operations approach, he like took up the charge of a bank that was failing the formerly enslaved people that it purported to serve, and exposed the fraud of the white owners of the bank, invested $10,000 of his own money, which at the time was really a lot of money, in an attempt to help recover some of the savings that were being lost, and made moves to shut it down before even more was lost. And he took, you know, he assessed and took a calculated risk. And I can just imagine like all the heartache and rage that he must have had to hold in that position, where he's like saving what he can of the gains that were made by this bank for freed Black folks at the time, while ultimately also facing like the major, major catastrophic failures of it, and then closing down the operations. And I just think that's something we could draw from in this time, that like some of us are facing that right now. That like the things that were built, some of them are gonna have to, we're gonna have to be the ones that face what it means to close them down or to pivot them. And so I just, we have lessons to learn.
It sounds like radical and risk are very aligned. And I had read something once in science, they're like, if you don't take the risk, you won't know what's on the other side, right? So if I mix these two things together, yep, it might explode, I'm not exactly sure, but I won't know and can't build if I don't take that risk. Keep us moving.
And like, what does it take for us to face that, you know?
And then that's where the more people who know more, who have connections, the easier it is to take that risk as a unit. I see. I'm picking up what y'all are putting down. So I want to ask this question about the podcast, but it reminded me of an experience that I was lucky enough to have as a new organizer, a relatively new organizer. We were in an area where a lot of folks spoke Spanish and many of us didn't. And so one of the organizers, she was like, I'm going to make an audio tape This is back in the days with cassettes in our cars. of all these words in Spanish, helping us that while we are driving between visits, we could practice so that we could speak to people and at least let them know someone else would come who could speak with them. And so that ability to listen and practice just really sort of aligned with or made me think about the value is still there for us to have this resource of the podcast. So let me hear a little bit about why the podcast for y'all.
Thanks for that story. It's so good. And also a great story about operations and how do we use the tools and technology we have to enhance our organizing work, not impede, but to enhance it and to support it. So thank you for that story.
Or even speed it up and pass it by, right?
That's right. The podcast, well, I think there's a few reasons. As you said in my bio, I'm from South Asia, was born in India, and then I was raised by the U.S. South. And both of these traditions and cultures have traditions of storytelling. Mm. And podcast is a way to tell stories. And I really wanted to bring operations alive through story. So many people view operations and operations workers in boxed in understanding of operations is things like data management, which is, yes, that's true. But there's stories in the data. What is the data? There's story there. And who's compiling the data? There's a story there. And so the podcast is a way to bring operations alive, to tell these stories, and also a way to make it more accessible to all folks, all leaders in the movement. Like, this is not just for operations workers, it is for ops folks, and it's for their teams, it's for their coworkers, it's for their supervisors, it's for all of us, again, to break down the barriers between operations and programs and to maybe use it as political education, maybe use it as a starting place for discussion. So those are some ideas. What do you think, Shaw? Why podcast? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I first came to you with the idea of a book, and I was like, let's write this up, and we're going to publish a book this summer.
It's a little That's bit right.
tend to be ambitious.
And, very
you
know, ambitious.
You were like, what about if we talk some more? And, you know, and it just became really clear to me, like, there's something really special about dialogue, you know, and about conversation. And I think it just became a theme also in all the conversations I got to have with people last summer and with you, that was just sort of like this adage and kind of drumbeat we keep having about there's no one answer to any of these questions. And that, like, there's no way that we could have a guide that would say, if X, then Y. And that's the answer, that it's actually like in conversation with each other where we can find the creative workarounds, the like radical ways to try things when there's stuff in our way.
It's also amazing that y'all chose the podcast because it's allowing you to bring in other folks' experiences and their voice. And that's just also very exciting that who all you've had a chance to speak with and to bring on this podcast.
I feel so blessed.
Yeah.
You know, and just imagining like what we really want is that folks will listen to these together.
Mm,
and, yeah, you know, either in a room together or listen to them separately and then come together to talk about it and use the workbook if you have particular things you're trying to grapple with or not. You know, you could listen to one or two or all of them. Like, we really want each episode to be kind of an offering that is like sparks dialogue for folks.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. We got amazing guests and guest hosts. And I also feel really lucky and blessed. And I think it's also a testament to relationship that all of the people we invited in were folks we've been building with and organizing with for the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And we know have a lot to say about this. So really, really glad.
That's great. I love the bringing them all in. What's the hope that you have for this project? And there's a lot of love and energy going in here. And what are you hoping for?
Yeah, I mean, I think my biggest hope is, like I was saying, that this will spark some dialogue and like spark dialogue with a starting place to grapple with some of the really deep existential questions that we're facing about the state of our movement, about how we're going to face the rising authoritarianism together and not let it break us apart and not let it turn us against each other. And I really hope people will listen to these, you know, in community and try out some of the tools that we're putting out there and talk to each other to figure out what's best.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with what Shaw just said. And it makes me think that we are in this moment of needing really strong coordination and practicing coordination. And if we can practice it with each other in our teams, in our organizations, in our communities, then we can practice it when it is needed out under authoritarianism. And so my hope is that it helps break down some of the false binaries between operations and program teams, and that it can help folks talk to each other, get into stronger coordination when building out campaigns, programs, organizations, and that, yeah, it just strengthens our skill set of coordinating together. I also hope it inspires people to be part of a lineage of radical operations and also seeing themselves in this timeline, that they are from a lineage of rad ops and will hopefully take on the mantle to continue it.
Yeah, I hope all of that as well. And I feel like this coordination and collaboration, we talk a lot at my organization about coordination. How do we help people get to coordination? And also that this work has to be understood by everyone. I remember working with Alex Tom on something, and he shared that as folks were doing maternity leave, et cetera, that making sure everyone understood everything, because if someone steps out, the team still needs to go. And so they spent time ensuring that everyone understood everyone's work and could do some portion of it to take care of that, to allow people to leave for what the, you know, family leave or whatever, not be stressed out. And it just made sense for the organization's ability to sustain and be strong. I know you all are so organized and coordinated that you already have some principles. And share with us those principles. That would be great. So we know what we're based in here.
Yeah. So we'll give people the short version. You can find a more in-depth version in the workbook. We'll put that in the show notes of this episode. And we developed them in conversation with a lot of folks, you included, Denise. So if you look in the workbook, you know, each of these principles has a little bit more example of what that means and quotes from movement leaders that we think have embodied these principles in different movements. And there's also an activity in the workbook where you can, with your team, review the principles together and then actually assess how often are you putting them into practice or not, and then brainstorm ways like how could you put one of these into practice a little bit more, you know, with that understanding that like none of us can embody these principles 100% of the time and at 100%. You know, we can't do it all, but we hope it'll be a guide for helping us assess, like, how often are we doing these things and how can we do them a little bit more? And I guess the other thing just to name quickly is, you know, we talk about like values aligned, and there's sort of this, it's a shorthand that I think we use sometimes that's like, let's be values aligned. And, you know, any organization can be values aligned. It depends on what the values are. So just being values aligned doesn't mean liberatory necessarily. And so in this framework, we also try to get really explicit about liberatory values, right? Because we think it's important to be specific about which values we mean when we say values aligned. And so these principles also really strive to reflect liberatory values by imagining and seeking alternatives that are outside of our current systems.
And as Sean mentioned, these are all laid out in the RADOPS workbook. And we put together some quotes that go with each of these principles and a little description. And so, again, it's something y'all can take back to your teams to talk it through and find out where you land on each of the principles. So you ready, Shah? Here we go.
Let's do it.
All right. I'm going to start us. Number one, honor the dignity of all labor, especially historically invisibilized labor.
Number two, prioritize collaboration, connection, and relationships.
Number three, approach conflict with curiosity.
That's a big one. This is another big one. Number four, embrace contradictions.
Number five, which Denise, you brought up earlier, assess and take calculated risks.
Number six, balance facing inward and outward.
Number seven, invest in transformation of people and systems.
And bringing us home with number eight, cultivate a culture of grounded care.
Those are amazing. And I want to encourage anyone, as you're working through these, to check in with Yashna on a centering practice for you and your team.
Yes.
I mean, this is off the cuff, but I wonder, Yashna, do you want to give us a 30-second centering?
Yeah.
Just how can we quick center with these?
Yeah. So take a couple of breaths just to arrive and land in what you just heard, this list of principles of containers that can hold our liberatory values. And then take one breath, and in this first breath, really feel into your length. Grow a little taller and feel into your dignity, honoring the dignity of all labor. And then take another breath, maybe move side to side, and really feel into our edges, our boundaries, as well as our extension, collaboration, connection, relationships. And then take another deep breath, and in this breath, we feel for our front and back, and we feel for this lineage, this RADOPS lineage. Feel for all that's come before that is setting you up to walk the road you're walking now. And then feel for your vision forward of which one of these principles you might want to forward this year with your team. And then one last deep breath. And just again, feeling for your place in this lineage, in this movement, in this work.
Thank you.
And now that we're nice and centered and feel the possibilities, speed it up a little bit.
And yes.
This is a skill too.
Yes, this speed round here of some questions.
Great.
All right. So spreadsheets versus post-its.
For me, depends on the day, but I'll go hard for both.
I'm definitely a both person too, but spreadsheets, if it's, I need to like share it with someone and get it kind of tight. Post-its, mm-hmm. if I'm imagining and dreaming.
I need colorful versions of both too.
Yeah.
Colorful mm-hmm. spreadsheets, colorful post-its.
Notes, digital versus analog, as I say, holding my pen.
I'm sorry. I'm digital all day just for ease.
I feel like for me, this is another depends. I'm digital if I'm trying to make sure that I'm quickly sharing information with other people. But if it's really just for me, I'm usually drawing and writing.
Text versus phone call versus voice note.
Phone call. I love a phone call. I'm old school. I love a phone call. A quick one, which then voice note would be my second because it's like a phone call.
Mm-hmm. I probably lean most heavily on texting, but I have become to really love a voice note.
That texting keeps a record.
That's right.
Receipts. Do you keep them or toss them?
Digitize them. Keep them. Keep them.
Yeah. I would say keep the digital, toss the physical.
Nice. Right.
Shout out to an organization or ops person you are loving right now.
Okay, I can't just do one, so I'm going to do a bunch. Chanda Jones, who is also the movement CFO, she taught me about budgeting and finance archetypes. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Nina Wong at NDWA. And of course, my four co-founders of RadOps, Tara, Felicia, May. And my buddy Shaw, who has made this project possible.
Yes. I'm shouting right back to you, Yeshna, because you are my go-to RadOps hero any day of the week. I also want to shout out all the Rad fundraisers out there, the resource mobilizers, my homies at Grassroots Global Justice, and then the Rising Majority, where we did a whole sector of the movement of funder and resource mobilizers. And then also there's a newly forming Rad Fundraisers Network. We're going to share more with you about that in another episode. And then I'll name my new organizational political home, the Patients Union, where we're pivoting a beautifully rich history of organizing from a previous organization into a new project. And I'm so excited to be learning about and angry to be learning about the state of the healthcare system, but how we could be organizing patients to fight together and have each other's backs.
Right on. Well, I'm going to be curious of how many of those shout outs are Capricorns, but let's keep going.
Yes.
What song do you put on and set the tone for a meeting or a session?
I do a lot of moody meetings, so I like anything by Aruj Aftab. But if I need something upbeat and like, let's go, then Somos Sur by Anna Tishu and Shadia Mansour.
I'm a big Bomba Estéreo person. Almost any of their songs I'll put on the room because it's like gets you moving and dancing and a little hype. And I don't know, Marvin Gaye is coming to mind. He's got a lot of good ones too. Put him on every once. Depends on the mood. But, you know, can also set a tone.
All right. I'm old Motown all day long. And soundtrack for your operations work.
Also moody and chill. I'll go for R&B, anything, any era. Recently, Gayatri Krishnan and Ravina, both DC R&B artists. And also other movement podcasts, such as Movement Money, mm-hmm. And Stories for Power. Stories for Power is telling place-based stories of 25 years of lessons from transformative justice work.
For me, usually if I'm listening to music, it's like nonverbal. And so there's this whole set of like lo-fi beats that I'll usually put on. But I also think the soundtrack, honestly, it's like the clickety-clack of my keyboard, it's the scratch of the like markers I'm using, it's, you know, the sip of the tea or the coffee. That's also a soundtrack for me.
Three words to describe the future of movement operations.
Build new worlds.
I love that one. Visionary, bold, and strategic.
Got six new words working with. one wish you have for movement operations people in this moment?
Believe in your ability to build beyond boxes and borders. And a wish for you, ops folks, for lots of unrestricted funding for you and your orgs. Lots and lots.
Yes, check, check, check. I think my wish for movement operations people is that you feel on purpose and that you are finding the way to do the thing that is yours to do right now.
Love that. Wow. Okay, y'all. That was our speed round there. And we've come to the close of our show, or your show.
It's your show too. We're so glad our show. This was like a gift.
Yeah, thank this you. Was a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun.
We hope you enjoyed the show. You can subscribe and listen to more episodes wherever you find podcasts. Check out the additional resources from each episode in the show notes and take it all back to dialogue with your teams about building adaptable and values-aligned infrastructure. You'll also find links there to subscribe to the RadOps Substack, where you'll get the latest updates and resources.
This show is produced by Josh Elstro and published by Convergence Magazine. Design support from Kimmy David. Music by Tiger Cat, my amazing 10-year-old, with Polish by Josh. And remember, keep it rad, y'all.